So this morning we're going to jump into the gospel. The gospel reading comes from the book of Matthew, chapter 5, verses 21 through 37. You have heard that it was said to those of ancient times, "You shall not murder, and whoever murders shall be liable to judgment. But I say to you that if you are angry with a brother or a sister, you will be liable to judgment. And if you insult a brother or a sister, you will be liable to the council. And if you say, 'You fool,' you will be liable to the hell of fire. So when you are offering your gift at the altar, if you remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother or sister, and then come and offer your gift. Come to terms quickly with your accuser while you are on the way to court with him, or your accuser may hand you over to the judge to the guard, and you will be thrown into prison. Truly I tell you, you will never get out until you have paid every last penny. You have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out, throw it away. It is better for you to lose one of your members than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. If your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off, throw it away. It is better for you to lose one of your members than for your whole body to go into hell. It was also said, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce. But I say to you that anyone who divorces his wife except on the grounds of unchastity causes her to commit adultery, and whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. Again, you have heard it was said that those of ancient times you shall not swear falsely, but carry out the vows that you have made to the Lord. I say to you, do not swear at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. You do not swear by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. Let your word be yes, yes, or no, no. Anything more than this comes from the evil one." So Jesus continues down his teaching road of talking about what he expects of his disciples. If you think about how Jesus did things, we saw that in the beginning, after his baptism and his temptations in the wilderness, he went and called his first disciples to follow him. Then he went about healing and teaching in the synagogues around Galilee. When he knows he has gotten people's attention, he takes them to a mountain and he teaches them. 2 weeks ago, we heard about the Beatitudes. Then last week, we heard about being salt and light to the world from Pastor Eby. This week, we now start to see that he is addressing the Ten Commandments. So I want to start with some of the verses that we did not hear last week. Verses 17 through 20 directly address Jesus' feeling on the law. "Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have come not to abolish, but to fulfill. For truly I tell you, until heaven and earth pass away, not one letter, not one stroke of a letter will pass from the law until all is accomplished. Therefore, whoever breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does them and teaches them will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven." It sounds pretty clear to me that he is not replacing the commandments with new ones, but bringing the Jewish people back to the original intent of the law, which is not just moral law, right and wrong, but how to have relationships with not only God, but with others. But verse 20 tells us that our righteousness must exceed the scribes and the Pharisees, or we can't get into heaven. So how does that work? So Dr. Robert A. Gulick says it this way: "This imperative, which be perfect as your Father is in heaven is perfect, it does not refer to moral perfection in the sense of be perfect, or to a legal perfection of keeping the whole law. but to one's qualitative standing before God and others. The relationship of wholeness between brothers and brothers, brothers and sisters, husband and wife, lies at the very foundation of all respected demands for specific conduct. The conduct itself grows out of, rather than produces, the relationship. Together, they compromise the righteousness that exceeds that of the scribes and the Pharisees. So when I look at what Jesus did in the start of his ministry, it helps me to look at it as a teacher would. We have all been to school, and we can pull up the memories, whether they're happy or not very happy, of those first days of school as a student. We find our classrooms, we get our lockers if we are in the older grades, we get our seats, and the teacher introduces him or herself to the class, and off we go with the school year. Now, from a teacher's standpoint, you normally get hired in May, if things work out right, and you have the summer to work out where you want to go. You get your classroom and all the stuff that comes with it, desks, curriculum, books, paperwork from the teacher or teachers before you, and whatever else has been purchased by previous teachers. You now have the job of organizing your classroom, deciding if you want to use the curriculum that was left by the previous teacher or buy a new one. How do you want to run your class? And a million other decisions that need to be made before you as the student sit in the desk and I as the teacher say, hello. Chapter 5 up to verse 20 is Jesus's hello, an introduction to his college-level course on how to interpret the Ten Commandments. And Jesus makes a faithful recalling of and reinvestment in ancient trustworthy traditions. So we know that Moses was given the Ten Commandments by God on Mount Sinai. And God wrote them on two stone tablets with his finger. And that is what the Israelites have been following for give or take 3,000 years. Now Jesus is going to begin his teaching at verse 21. I'm going to revert to the Message Bible to help us understand these verses better. So verse 21 through 24. You're familiar with the command to the ancients, do not murder. I am telling you that anyone who is so much as angry with a brother or sister is guilty of murder. Carelessly call a brother idiot, and you just might find yourself hauled into court. Thoughtlessly yell stupid at a sister, and you are on the brink of hellfire. The simple moral fact is, words kill. This is how I want you to conduct yourself in these matters. If you enter your place of worship and about to make an offering, you suddenly remember a grudge a friend has against you, abandon your offering, leave immediately, go to this friend and make things right. Then, and only then, come back and work things out with God. So Jesus starts out with murder, and he includes being judgmental. Most people, even in Jesus' time and in ours, murder was an easy commandment to keep. But he includes being judgmental as being on the same line as murder. Jesus' teaching technique here is to create agreement with his audience on the easiest points first before moving to those points where it is less likely that there will be widespread agreement. Melanie A. Howard puts it this way. In each example that Jesus provides, Jesus notes the minimal requirement of the law before articulating an ethic that exceeds that most basic obligation. In each case, this ethic appears to be informed by the values of truth and compassion within the community. So I want to share a personal story with you in light of this set of verses. And every time I read these verses, I put myself in that murderer category. So in 2015, my mother passed away. Now, it was not a surprise that she passed away. She had cancer. It was a surprise that she got out of hospice, and 3 weeks later, she was gone. Can you hear me? Nope. Can you increase my volume, Kevin? Can you hear me now? Okay, thank you. So, 2015, my mother passes away, dies from cancer, not a surprise. She had pancreatic cancer. It was just a surprise that it didn't take very long. So, myself, my father, my two kids, we drive out to California for her funeral, and to divide up what left of her possessions there were. So when I get there to California, I find out that my younger brother had somehow in the last 3 weeks of my mother's life convinced her to purchase him a large screen TV and a video game system. Now, as the older brother, you can imagine that made me quite angry. But I knew where I was and I knew what position I was in. So I consulted with my father and me and him agreed that I would not confront my brother until we were about ready to go. So last night we're about to go, we're dividing up jewelry. I ask all the children, because I did not want them to be part of this, to leave. Please go up, make sandwiches, out of the room. And I confronted my brother. And of course, I'm military. I came across like I was a military petty officer and I chewed into him. Well, rightfully so, he chewed right back into me. That was our last conversation. So now up to the end of 2018, my brother's health started going downhill. As his health went downhill, he ended up going to a nursing home and having to get tube fed. Now, it was life-threatening, but it was not life-ending. So for about 6 months, he stayed in the nursing home. And as he's in the nursing home, I am trying to get a hold of him. Really, one, to apologize, and two, to see how he's doing. But he never called me back. I let his kids know. I let my sister know. But to no avail, he never called. And in early 2019, he was released into his son's house. And unfortunately, my brother did a few things, and he passed away. So to this very day, that is why I believe, that is an example, I believe, as to why Jesus includes being judgmental in with murder. As it kills relationships, as I unfortunately did with my brother, and I can't redo that again. Verses 27 and 28, you know the next commandment pretty well too. Don't go to bed with another spouse. But don't think you have preserved your virtue simply by staying out of bed. Your heart can be corrupted by lust even quicker than your body. Those ogling looks you think nobody notices, they also corrupt. As men and women in the 21st century, this is extremely hard to live up to. Anywhere you look, you see ads, individuals dressed like that latest model they saw on Facebook, or TV shows that depict scenes that 10 or 15 years ago you would never dreamed of seeing. I remember hearing that it was a huge controversy when Lucy and Desi on the Lucille Ball show slept in the same room, even though they were in separate beds. Do your best. That is why God offers us grace, because we cannot be perfect. Verses 31 and 32, remember the scripture that says, whoever divorces his wife, let him do it legally, giving her divorce papers and her legal rights. Too many of you are using that as a cover for selfishness and whim, pretending to be righteous just because you are legal. Please, no more pretending. If you divorce your wife, you're responsible for making her an adulteress, unless she has already made herself that by sexual promiscuity. And if you marry such a divorced adulteress, you're automatically an adulterer yourself. You can't use legal cover to mask moral failure. Now, in Jesus' time, much like ours, divorce was rampant. Some men would divorce their wives for as little as burning their dinner, and they believed that it was okay because they had done what the law required. There are definitely two sides of what was believed to be right and wrong in Jesus' time, as there is in our own time. But Jesus wants to encourage the continuity of marriage, except in cases of infidelity where trust has already been broken. But Jesus underscores the need for trust and compassion within human relationships, to include marriage. So what Jesus is truly doing here is he is elevating women up to the same level as men. He is saying that women are not possessions, which is the way they were treated then and unfortunately in some cases now. Women should be treated with equality at all times, period. Now we get to what we could consider the least of this morning's teachings, but since Jesus included it in this particular sermon, it must be very important. Verses 33 through 37, you don't say anything you don't mean. This counsel is embedded deep in our traditions. You only make things worse when you lay down a smokescreen of pious talk, saying, I'll pray for you and never doing it, or saying, God be with you and not meaning it. You don't make your words true by embellishing them with religious lace. In making your speech sound more religious, it becomes less true. Just say yes and no. When you manipulate words to get your own way, you go wrong. Why would Jesus include this with murder, adultery, and divorce? Seems kind of odd, but think about the time Jesus lived in. When deals were struck, they most always were exclusively done with a handshake. In today's day and age, even now, when deals are struck, it is very customary to shake hands, even though we make sure we have written contracts to hold everyone accountable. Jesus is telling us once again about showing people the values of trust and compassion within our community. Just say yes. No need to swear on your firstborn grandchild or anything like that. If you are not going to do it, just say no. No need to add anything. Just show people integrity in your dealings with them. It hasn't changed in 5,000 or so years. Joy J. Moore sums up this teaching this way. Jesus is teaching that keeping the letter of the law will not fulfill the justice of God. Only by being different than the culture around us will the world notice God in us. Only by being a living example of righteousness, mercy, and humility will the world glimpse the kingdom that God is forming through the Spirit-filled community inspired by the life, death, resurrection, and promised return of Jesus. Just like Pastor Eby told us last week, be the salt and light and show that to the world. Jesus Christ is telling his disciples and all of us, he is not here to abolish the law that Moses gave us over 5,000 years ago. He came to explain the intent of what God gave Moses and wants all of us as his disciples to follow his example, which is what he shows all of us after he completes the greatest sermon ever given. Amen.